All right, thanks very much, Ryan Burrow. This, of course, is German music in anticipation of the Angela Merkel news conference coming up. Any idea of when it, are you seeing any indications up there?
They're not quite in the room yet, so okay. It could still be a little ways off.
So here's the plan. They will come out and talk and have some opening statements. We'll sort of blow through them, but once they get to the questions, we'll drop in. Of course, the Irish music is in honor of St. Patrick's Day, as we are in Chicago. And in the studio is Andrea Haynes from Blue Sky Innovation. Andrea, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Thanks, Steve.
You know, I always complain on St. Patrick's Day that we should be having a parade today. You know, they've moved it to Saturday, and it's making me sound old because it's been a long time. But, boy, it used to be. I mean, it's great today anyway. You see everyone walking around in their sweaters and all. But I used to love that day in the middle of the week, just a big old party. Everyone come downtown.
Yeah, and the way it felt this week, or this year in particular, it feels like it's over.
It
feels
so
like
it
all happened
it
last
That's
week, and now you're like, oh, it's actually today.
We'll do a little Irish shopping coming up in the second half hour, so we're not done with it just yet. But okay, Blue Sky Innovation, they write about the tech world and the innovative world, the entrepreneurs in Chicago. And while we're waiting to hear from Trump and Merkel, I think it's appropriate that we start with this H-1B visa story, because H-1Bs are the ones that businesses use. They bring people over, tech workers or whatever, to help in business. They're sponsored. They get fast-tracked. But the Trump administration is going to cut them or slow them down? Or what's happening there exactly?
Yeah, so they're slowing down the fast-tracking of these visas, which are super important to the tech world. And Mayor Emanuel, as you know, has been kind of fighting on this immigration issue. And so he joined five universities, which included Columbia, DePaul, Illinois Tech, Loyola, and Northwestern, to work to sponsor some extra H-1Bs that basically will be through universities, and there's a little more window there. The caps aren't so tight.
So I know you're not an expert in it. I don't want to ask you a question you don't know the answer to, but the H-1Bs, those are basically, so the best man at my wedding, one of my best friends, Rob Henson, is a CEO in Iowa now in healthcare. He came to this country on a work visa because he was a physical therapist at the time. There was a shortage in the U.S., he came from the Netherlands and became eventually a CEO and citizen here through that. Would that have been an H-1B?
See, I
might have been a work visa
for somebody.
I'm not
like
sure.
That. It was right. Probably some kind of skilled worker visa.
The point of it is that these visas, you know, work. They bring people in, people who are productive, and it's good for us. And now they're threatened. Why is it that the schools are joining together and not businesses? What's the advantage that schools have?
Yeah, so schools, they get a little bigger cap, so it's like the limits aren't so great. And the schools are, of course, very concerned about this because they get tons of foreign students. Then those students, we want them to stay and build businesses. And, you know, actually Mark Cuban was talking about this week, not necessarily exactly related to this, but he was pointing out if people aren't working for you in your country, then they're working for another country,
exactly,
right?
Yeah.
So do we want the smartest tech minds working for other countries, or do we want them working for us? And I think the universities are looking for ways to help make sure they're working.
Now, the people who are opposed to this say, well, these companies could be hiring Americans to do these jobs, right?
That's true. And I think there is a little more of a, you know, there's a little bit of an issue there. I mean, we occasionally hear from people who take that point of view, who say, you know, this is just ways to bring in maybe cheaper workers and, you know, costing American jobs. I think the weight of the argument is probably on the side of we need many of these at least. Companies definitely have a need for these kind of workers.
All right. So there's that. We'll follow that because it's certainly going to be in the news in the months and probably years to come. We've talked about Parachute before, which is an interesting business. It's they don't provide classes, right? They are like a conduit for parents with young kids to go to a cooking class or a little kid karate class, right? Things like that.
Yep, exactly. Art classes, language classes, a wide variety, designed with parents in mind who know that their kid might try something once and then not want to go back.
So it's like a Saturday morning, what am I going to do with this kid today sort of thing.
Exactly. It allows you to kind of sample across just a wide range of, you know, from museums to private course providers, all kinds of classes listed on their platform. You pay a monthly fee. There's, you know, varying levels of how many classes you want.
Right.
And then you can just kind of drop in on the classes.
And so, and I think the monthly fee, the unlimited fee is $129, which
exactly.
That's unlimited. So,
yeah.
Okay, and so now they're trying to raise capital. And help me out. Is this a fairly recent development in Illinois where these companies can do this short of selling stock publicly or things like that?
Exactly. So equity crowdfunding, it's called, which isn't the most musical name, but what it does is it allows you to invest as a quote-unquote amateur investor. There are still rules regarding your assets and how much of those you can invest, which is an attempt to protect people from going too crazy and investing in things that, you know, nothing may not pan
so
out.
So you can
right?
only invest so, a percentage of your income
exactly.
or holdings.
Exactly. They'll look at your net worth, your income. You can invest a percentage of that. But it does allow, you know, you and me, whoever, amateur investors, we can now invest in these companies through these online platforms.
So
and Parachute
Kickstarter,
is using
like
that.
With Kickstarter, those companies, you get the gizmo.
Exactly.
With this, you actually get equity in the company.
You get equity in the company. So if the company goes public or if the company is sold and there's a payout, you would get a percentage of that calculated at the time you buy in.
Which brings us back to Parachute, and this is working very well for them.
Yeah, so they're using traditional, you know, venture capital money, but they're also using this crowdfunding method. And for them, it's proved interesting because they seem to be getting very smart potential investors. I looked at the site, and people are asking very sophisticated questions really about the investment opportunity. But they're also getting parents who are like, we're paying $129 per kid per year, potentially. You know, we invest a few $1,000s, we get a free sort of lifetime membership to the program.
Right.
There's one at a certain level, you get to sit on an advisory board. So parents are kind of liking that they can help perhaps shape the company and maybe get a payout one day.
And so it's a way, it kind of strikes me as back in the 90s where the whole IPO craze, you know, people were getting in on that and,
yep.
and everyone had an E-Trade account. And this is kind of that in a different way, right? You can find these little companies, invest in them from the ground up, invest what you can afford to lose.
Yeah.
But we all dream of these huge payouts.
Yeah.
And this
is
a company that could do well.
I think so. And, you know, I think it is one where, you know, the parental involvement, they're the customer really. So
well, that's the
it
other
kind
thing.
Of makes sense on both sides.
And it speaks well to them, doesn't it? That it's got that their customers
yep.
are investing
and the parents
in
are buying in. So we'll see how that works out.
Right. And we'll meet at a pottery class on Sunday afternoon.
Exactly.
Is South by Southwest over the tech part of it?
Tech part is over. Okay. On to music.
Right. Michael Heidemann, you know Michael.
Yes, yeah.
Has been down there, and we talked to him, I think, on Tuesday afternoon. But there's a nice story in Blue Sky about sort of the serendipity of it all, that people sleeping all over the place and meeting each other, and I suppose that's the way it worked again this year.
Yeah. Meg Graham, our reporter, was down there this year, and she wrote kind of a funny story, but it's also kind of telling about why the startups want to be down there and the lengths they'll go to be down there when,
right.
you know, the hotels sell out really fast and they're very high priced during a high-profile conference like this. So there are people literally renting hammocks.
For $100 a night?
$100 a night for a hammock.
Right.
To sleep on someone's hammock.
They
and,
got
you
bats
know, some
down
of the,
in Austin. I don't want to do that.
Yeah. The Airbnbs and some of those things have really opened up that world of just literally finding a few square feet to kind of, you know, lay your head at night.
And meet the right person. And, you know, Michael was talking about, too, how Uber and Lyft aren't there because of they had some political fights. And it's created this vacuum for other sort of rideshare companies. So,
yeah, they do seem pretty flexible about how they do things down there, don't they?
Andrea Haynes, the editor of Blue Sky Innovation and the content editor for Red
for
Eye.
Red Eye, yeah.
Is it all about St. Patrick's Day? All about
so Red Eye did a lot of St. Patrick's last week, as we discussed. So this week we're telling you kind of how to get out of town. Driving distance, maybe within a couple hours, but where you can go to get the heck out of Dodge for a minute.
You want to say hello to anyone? Or?
Sure. I have with me today Juliet Bartz, who is our intern on her last day today from Northwestern. So we've really enjoyed having her here. We actually had her out on the H-1B story this week. She did
nice.
A great job on that. And yeah, she's having an exciting time with her basketball team. And
we
now,
all
now
are.
Spring break.
Good luck. It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Let's check the traffic hot spots now. Here's Jill Egan. It's 12:23. This is the Business Lunch on 720 WGN as we celebrate St. Patrick's Day and as well March Madness. And on the phone line now is Tom Gimbel from LaSalle Network. Tom, welcome back to the Business Lunch.
Always good to be with you, Steve.
Tom, you know, we have a chair. I got a chair right here. I got a microphone.
I should be there today. I apologize for not being there live.
No, it's okay because you got big doings today, and that's kind of what we want to talk about. You know, Ryan Burrow is watching the scores up at the NCAA tournament. Michigan is playing now, and, you know, this is one of those days. Ryan's lucky because he gets paid to do it. Most workers are sort of cheating their bosses by following the tournament today. You kind of embrace that, right?
Yeah, my feeling is that people are going to watch no matter what. So about 6 years ago, we started having a March Madness party at our office. So we invite our clients to come in. We have about 400 people that come over to our office. Our whole employee base participates. Now, we've got some people that don't give a lick about basketball, and they're at their desk doing work, yeah. And other people that are drinking beer and eating chicken wings and cheering on their team.
Wait a minute. So you have people there who don't care about the tournament, which I get. They're not taking advantage of the party?
Wouldn't you think?
Wow.
There's a lot of people that say, you know what, this is great, but I'm conscientious and want to work. And the other people are saying they're back and forth. We're having, again, like I said, almost 400 clients that are here. And because it's St. Patrick's Day, we incorporated corned beef. We've got the beer is dyed green this year. So we've got a double whammy over here today.
Sounds like a lot of fun. I wish you'd invited me this year, Tom.
You never come to anything I invite you.
You know, I'm sorry. It's so rude. I just don't go anywhere. But talk about this in sort of a wider picture, because there are a lot of bosses. There are probably a lot of guys and women who are ticked off right now at their workers because they know they're not putting in a full day's work. It seems to me that those guys are kind of maybe missing an opportunity.
Yeah, my belief is that a lot of the, you know, you read the articles about the lost productivity because of the tournament or the day after the Super Bowl or whatever it is. And ironically enough, the people that mandate the rules, they're usually out at some party or they're taking the day off or they're getting their emails from their kids or their friends. And it's like, let's just embrace it. People are going to be on there, especially in the day of the game is being streamed online. So people are going to be on their phone or doing it. Incorporate it. Make it part of the fun. And at the end of the day, you're not losing as much productivity as you gain in emotional connection to your staff if they feel that you want to make work fun. It's 2 days. It's Thursday and Friday, and make it fun. It's not, and if you don't have a TV in your office, wheel one in. Who cares?
Right.
Because the end result is you have empathy for your employee base.
Empathy. I'm glad you used that word. I was talking to someone earlier this week. I can't remember specifically who it was, but it was Randy Schaefer. We were talking about social media and different things that bosses should do. And I want your take on this. It was an essay, I think, in the Wall Street Journal, and the CEO encouraged other bosses to friend their employees right away on Facebook. He said he did it because he starts to get to know them a little bit more, not just that they sit at a cubicle while everyone else is at a March Madness party, but maybe learn that, you know, they love bingo or whatever. But it creates empathy then for the employees to also see the boss and with his family on Facebook, all of that. It's a long way around to say that empathy matters a lot.
It matters a ton. And, you know, it's whether you're a parent or a grandparent or a child or a brother or sister, that we only know people the way we see them. And, I mean, I've had staff here where at the end of the day, I'm going to the Bulls game or a Cubs game and I throw on a pair of jeans and get out of my slacks or suit. And people look at me and they go, wow, you look normal. And
right.
I don't wear a suit on Saturday at 8 in the morning. You know, I am normal. And to get people to, now that's not everybody. Most of my staff sees me in a casual setting. But it's true and it's real, and especially in bigger companies, that when people connect and they can see each other in social media, it shows what's real. People are human.
You know, because there used to be sort of a strict line, right? You brought your work to work and your home stayed home. You didn't mix them. And it seems to me that in recent years now, there's more of an intermingling of the two. And I suppose if you know the whole person, that's better off for everybody.
Yeah, I think I really believe it is, Stephen. And, you know, you and I are old enough to remember 10 or 12 years ago when social media started to become prevalent and companies wouldn't hire somebody if they had a beer can in their picture, right? And today people are like, well, of course they have a beer can in their picture. They're not putting pictures of themselves, you know, at church. They're putting a picture of themselves at a party. And people are human beings and they're having fun and they're enjoying life. And those are good things, and you want people to have a life outside of the office, and there's no reason you shouldn't share that with your coworkers.
All right, let's go back to that Wall Street Journal column then. Do you think it's a good idea for bosses to friend their employees on Facebook?
Absolutely. I think, but the key is you have to know your employee base. And if there's somebody who never sees their employees and they're pinging them just to do that,
right,
that you get employees saying, what are they trying to do, be a big brother and know everything that's going on? So if you're friendly with your staff, then it's a good thing to be Facebook friends with them. If you're not, it's a little bit strange. And it's more about how you interact with them than it is about being connected to them virtually.
Right. If they're surprised that you friended them, then it might be a little intimidating. But they shouldn't be surprised in the first place.
Yeah, if you're the CEO of a $100 million company and you hire a new receptionist and you send him or her a Facebook invitation right. the next day, it might be a little strange.
Right. Okay. So big game today. Obviously, there's these few little games during the day, but at night Marquette will play South Carolina.
Do you have a rooting interest in that, Steve?
I can't believe they're making them play in South Carolina, but I think it's pretty clear Marquette's going to win that game.
You would think so. I think the big news will be non-tournament in the Midwest is Tom Crean was fired from Indiana yesterday. I was wondering if Illinois or DePaul or somebody like that picks him up.
Former Marquette coach as well. All right, listen, you
Absolutely.
Guys have a great time. Build that morale at the LaSalle Network, and I appreciate you joining us today.
Happy St. Patrick's Day.
Tom Gimbel, you can follow him at Tom Gimbel or at LaSalle Network on Twitter. We're standing by waiting for Donald Trump and Angela Merkel. They'll take a few questions from reporters today. The president unveiled his budget this week, so he's got some questions facing him. Right now, we'll check the headlines sponsored by Papa John's Pizza. They just opened one in my neighborhood. Here's Ryan Burrow. All right, Ryan Burrow, thanks very much. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN, a Friday edition as we head into the weekend, and it is St. Patrick's Day, so a special day as well in Chicago and in many spots around the world, I guess, but few more so than in Chicago. And so earlier this week, we talked to Harrington's, which is a purveyor of fine Italian beef, and so I thought we'd talk about maybe some Irish shopping. It's odd to me that didn't set out this way, but you think generally of the South Side when it comes to the Irish. We've been hanging out on the Northwest Side. And so we'll say hello now to Mary Ann Jones, the owner of Gaelic Imports, which is up on Gunnison, 6346 East Gunnison. Mary Ann, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Hi. It's nice to talk to you. Happy St. Patty's Day.
Happy St. Patty's Day. Right back at you, Mary Ann. So are you busy today? Is this a busy day
for
you?
Oh, we're very busy today, yes. This is a very, very busy day.
Tell me a little bit about, I was talking to Harrington yesterday about the season of it and how this is a big time of year for them. I don't know if it's sort of the same thing for you guys or not. I mean, do you do a relatively even business year round, or do you have peaks around this time of year?
No, we have highs and lows, and this is definitely a peak. It lasts about 2 weeks, the season here.
And when
St. Patty's Day.
When it starts before, obviously, right?
It starts before the parade and then continues on through this weekend.
So people go there to get their tchotchkes, or what are they picking up from you?
They're picking up Irish sausage and black and white pudding and rashers of bacon and mostly soda bread.
Yeah? You make your own soda bread, right?
We do. We're baking it around the clock right now.
How much are you baking today?
Oh, a few hundred loaves.
A few hundred loaves you're going to move today and through the weekend?
Probably, yeah.
Wow. What's your favorite there?
Probably the Irish sausage.
Yeah, okay. My son's a big rashers fan, so I should stop and pick up some rashers with you.
They're very good.
Tell me a little bit about your clientele, because I know you sell Irish groceries.
Do
you sell groceries to Irish citizens living in Chicago, or are they American citizens who kind of pretend they want to be Irish?
Well, they're both. There's Americans and there's Irish citizens. I would say the majority are probably Irish citizens. It's more like a home grocery store for them.
Is that right? Yeah.
And so we bring in a lot of imported goods.
So tell me about the idea of community when it comes to small businesses, because that's something that always kind of fascinates me. You must deal with a pretty specific community, and you need to foster that to keep them coming back. How important is that to you?
Absolutely. It's very important, Steve. Little stores like this, if there's a benefit or, a fundraiser, this is the first place they come to, because the people that need the help are always part of the community. And it's the little stores that contribute. You can buy some of these things in the bigger box stores, but they're not the people that donate and help out at the benefits. It's the littler stores.
It's the littler stores. And it's the littler stores that kind of know what's going on, right? So you've got your ear
Absolutely.
To the community.
Absolutely. Yeah, like we have a bulletin board. Anything comes up, people come in and put it on the bulletin board or on our Facebook page. We definitely have our ear to the community and are there to help whenever we can.
You know, I think sometimes we tend to forget that, on a day like today, everyone is wearing green or everyone pretends they're Irish. And then you forget the core of the people who actually are Irish and who do maintain a residence here. I'm just wondering, do you pick up from them any different view of Chicago than the rest of us might have? You know what I'm saying? I mean, obviously a different worldview. How different are is their experience living here than it would be our experience living here?
I don't think it's that much different from our experience. I think in some cases it's very different from their experience at home. A lot of people are from rural areas and then they come to the big city. But I don't think it's all that different from our experience.
And you sell clothing is there as well, and souvenirs, things like that?
Yes, we do. We're mainly a grocery store and a bakery, but we do sell some clothing and gifts. We have Balik and Crystal and things like that.
Yeah, the Balik is the bone china, right?
Correct. Yes.
So tell me this. I lead groups. In fact, I'm going to lead a group to Ireland next month. Almost exactly a month from today. And when we go to some of the shops and I talk to some of the shop owners, they say that a lot of the sweaters that they're selling now aren't necessarily made in Ireland anymore. Is that your experience as well?
It's my experience that they're available for purchase. I don't know as in Irish stores you would get them. A lot of them are machine made in Ireland.
Right.
But like if you go to a bigger store, a lot of them may be made elsewhere, yes. But in an Irish store, you probably would get a handmade sweater from Ireland.
Okay, so now you're going to give me a little tip then. When I go, how do I find those Irish stores?
Oh, well, there's not too many left in Chicago.
Yeah.
You just have to Google them, I suppose.
All right, we're talking to Mary Ann Jones, the owner of Gaelic Imports. Mary Ann, how long have you owned the store?
I've owned it for 14 years. The store's been in business since 1957.
And did you buy it from a family member or a whole different
thing? No, I bought it from the sister and brother-in-law of the man that started Gaelic Imports.
And so during that time, what have you learned about running a neighborhood business? How different is your approach now than it was when you started it 14 years ago?
Well, I was very lucky. Dick Mulholland that I bought the store for spent several months with me training me how to bake and do the ordering and everything. So my approach is not too much different than when I started the store. But like I said, I had a good tutor. And it's a small store, so we pretty much stick to the same routine.
Are you still doing the baking or do you have people who do that for you now?
No, I'm still doing the baking.
You are. So am I keeping you out of the oven? Is your face smudged with soda?
No, my clothes have a little flour all over them, and the soda bread's in the oven, so we're all right right now.
Well, I know that it's a very busy time for you, and I appreciate you taking the time to join us. What's the biggest thing that's moving? Because, well, I would like to try the shepherd's pie, but I would imagine when people come in around St. Patrick's Day, it's all about corned beef and cabbage.
We don't carry corned beef and cabbage, Steve.
There you go.
Irish don't. That's not an Irish dish.
Here we go.
Boiling bacon.
You carry boiling bacon. Tell me the difference.
Yes. Boiling bacon looks like a loin of pork, but it's cured differently and has a different taste. It's brought to a boil and simmer, just like corned beef. And when the Irish came over, it wasn't that readily available. And I think the rumor has it a lot of them settled in Jewish areas where corned beef was present.
Yeah.
And that's how we manage Americans eating corned beef.
So you stay true to it, and you don't sell corned beef at the shop. There must be pressure for you.
I do not.
You could make some cash if you did that, Mary Ann.
I probably could. Every year at St. Patty's Day, people come in and ask if we have corned beef, but there's plenty of places that sell that.
And you're not.
But we stick with the boiling bacon.
I like that. Well, listen, thank you very much for joining us today. I do appreciate it. I know it's a very busy time for you. And I wish you a great St. Patrick's Day, great year ahead.
Thank you. I just wanted to correct one thing, Steve. We're at 6346 West Gunnison, not East.
West, okay. And, East would get us a little wet, wouldn't it?
Yeah, we probably would be swimming. You have a nice day, and thanks for calling.
All right, thanks very much. Mary Ann Jones, the owner of Gaelic Imports. This is the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. It's 12:49. This is the Business Lunch on 720 WGN, a St. Patrick's Day edition. And as Ryan has been saying, we've been talking about the fact we're kind of standing by waiting for a news conference from President Trump and German Chancellor Angela Merkel. When they do these after the meetings, it's kind of tradition where they come out, make a statement, and then each leader takes two questions. So it'll start one for, I would imagine, Merkel, then one for Trump, blah, blah, blah. So they'll take four. So it'll be relatively quick. But there are a number of issues facing our president not the least of which would be his relationship with Angela Merkel, but also the budget released and some of his tweets as well. So we thought it would be of value to carry that, and we're standing by to do that. It probably won't last very long, and interested to see what the president says when he says it. But until then, we're going to talk a little bit about millennials in the workplace. Rex Connor is the author of What If Common Sense Was Common Practice in Business, and he joins us on a phone line. Now, Rex, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Thanks, Steve. Glad to be with you and glad to be on the Business Lunch.
Common sense and common practice, that seems almost impossible. That would never happen, would it?
Well, it's unfortunately rare in the workplace, it seems.
And so the crux of this, or what I read that you're talking about a lot, are millennials and keeping millennials sort of stationary if they're a value to you, to keep them working with you. Because I think more than any other generation, these millennials tend to bounce from place to place. They are looking for things. Sometimes we don't speak their language. They are looking for benefits and attributes in a company that the older generations don't necessarily think are important, so they might not be translating that to the younger workers, right? How do established businesses keep millennial workers?
Well, I'll tell you, I don't view millennials as aliens, you know, so different than the others in what they want on the workplace. I mean, who doesn't want benefits? Who doesn't want to be treated fairly? Who doesn't want to feel that they're contributing? The reason we talk about millennials, and you described it so well, they bounce around in the workplace, that's happening in record numbers. The reason is they have a lower threshold of tolerance. If they feel like they aren't being treated fairly, if they feel like they aren't contributing, they're a lot more likely than their older predecessors to, you know, saying take this job and shove it and take their talents elsewhere.
Yeah, I think there's a quote from you said that your generation, maybe my generation, can be sort of beaten into submission and accept things the way they are. Millennials aren't going to take that so much.
Yeah, they're a lot less tolerant of that for whatever reason. But the factors, what we can do to retain them, it's the same things we should be doing for all of our workers. I am a small business, and I relate to this from that perspective.
What's your small business?
Well, I have a consulting business. We go into companies and help them with HR, people processes, and systems, especially training.
Okay, and so I understand you're saying that they're not this alien life force. They're not, you know, that much different than us. But they do sort of have different priorities, don't they, when it comes to time off or different sorts of the benefit package that would have looked really appealing to me coming to out of college isn't the same sort of benefit package that is appealing to them as they're in their early years in the workforce.
You know, that's a very valid point. They do have particular characteristics, things they're looking for that weren't as important to their predecessors.
And what are some of the differences there? I mean, I hear that they're more likely to associate with a cause maybe than a 401k or things like that.
Yeah, that's a good point because they're very realistic and let's not pretend that they aren't intelligent. They can look at 401ks. See, my generation, the boomers, we had all these big businesses that paid a defined benefit plan. And so you just had to live and stay with the company for a long time. You get retirement. And you've seen during your generation, if you're Gen X, you've seen the big transition away from that to, hey, you contribute and will contribute, which means you aren't, that in itself doesn't keep you loyal to a company.
Right, right.
And so the millennials come along, they see that, they say, well, you know, what is loyalty? They're redefining loyalty for us in the workplace.
I like that you say they're not stupid because I think a lot of people, older people, if they don't share the same view, tend to diminish it a little bit, and they need to adapt because the millennials now are the single biggest block in the employment sector, right? I mean, they've reached sort of critical mass that way.
Yeah, whether you like the characteristics of millennials or not, you still have to deal with reality. Common sense tells you that if you want to keep them, you need to address the needs.
Yeah, and I do like them. I work with a number, and I think it's a fascinating approach. I enjoy being around it. But one of the things you write about in the book is this idea of objectivity versus subjectivity. And I want you to sort that out for me. Explain that for me a little bit.
I'm glad you jumped to that, Steve, because that's the secret sauce. That's what no one is talking about. And that's what's going to retain people, whether they're millennials or older. The problem is subjectivity in the workplace. Subjectivity means that things are open to interpretation by different people. And so if, for example, a task you have to do on your job, if that's not objective, meaning well-defined, how you do it, what the evaluation would be, if it's open to interpretation, that's where the conflicts come from in the workplace, especially between the boss and the boss.
So if,
you know, the boss and the employee.
If my boss tells me that he wants me to go out and increase customer enthusiasm, something like that, that's a very subjective thing. That's not going to work so well. Is that what we're talking about?
That, boy, you hit the nail on the head, and hit a little close to home last week with one of my millennials. I said, hey, you need to, if we want five people to come to our workshops, you're probably going to need to call 20 or 25 people. And when I checked with him the next day, he said, mission accomplished. I said, good, five people are coming to the workshop. He said, no, I called 20 to 25 people. That's what you told me to do.
Well, that's interesting to me because you did give him, well, he heard very objective instructions from you. He just heard the wrong objective instructions from you.
That's my interpretation.
Exactly, yeah. All right, so advise, if you will, the bosses who are out there listening how they sort of de-subjectify the workplace and increase the objectivity of it all.
Well, it can be as simple. I mean, there's a process you can go through, and people that are in the quality movement or in HR probably can help with the process of mapping out work processes and identifying places that are holes or that have subjective language. But just on a simple scale, whether I'm the boss or the boss, when I find myself in a disagreement, as I did last week, and unfortunately it happened more often than that, I stop and I say, wait a minute, what's the root cause of this disagreement? Obviously we're disagreeing. What's the root cause? And I look at it, and there's something in the work process, how we do it, what the outcome should be, how it should be evaluated. There's something that's not clear. If I can systematically go through and clarify all of those factors, expectations, evaluations that aren't clear, if I can clarify them, make them objective, that's going to take away the source of all of those conflicts.
Rex Connor, the author of the book, What If Common Sense Was Common Practice in Business. Rex, great to talk to you today. I appreciate it.
You too. Thanks for having me on the show, Steve.
You bet. It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN.